Johnny Mac with your daily comedy news. I'm actually recording this Saturday episode on Thursday afternoon. So if between now and then, you know, I don't know, there's rioting in the streets or the person I thought was going to be president on Thursday is not the president or who the hell knows what's happening. It has been a long week and I wanted to pre-record this one so I could get some sleep. I do other things, some political podcasts I work on. So it's been a lot of late nights and early mornings. Got some leftover jokes from during the week. Jimmy Kimmel said, "I'm very happy and relieved that it looks like we're finally sending this monster back to Mar-a-Lago, but I'm also shocked that it was this close. I mean, we reunited the cast of every movie and TV show ever made to win this election. It's unimaginable to me that close to half of American voters saw what this man has done to the country over the last 4 years." Then he read a long list that includes he dismantled the pandemic response team and he called neo-Nazis very fine people. "And almost half of us are apparently okay with that. Half of us wants to keep going for 4 more years. What more did Trump have to do to show us that he's insane and not fit to lead this country? I feel like I overestimated the American people and I underestimated the village people. Apparently, a lot of voters looked at 90,000 COVID cases a day and said, sure, I could do 4 more years of this." James Corden said, "Obviously, the election was much closer than anyone had predicted. Despite a large turnout from voters, there was no crashing blue wave. I mean, how does this happen? Even after the Democrats got the cast of Parks and Rec to reunite over Zoom? Think about it, the entire cast. I thought that would be the turning point, but no. I don't know how that didn't speak to Republican voters." Some more leftover jokes from during the week. You can put on your time machine hat and figure out where they went, but they're good jokes, so I will share them. Trevor Noah said, "Can we just take a moment to admit it's insane that an American president is just demanding that they stop counting votes while he's ahead? This is such a textbook authoritarian move, which is impressive coming from a guy who has never read a textbook." Colbert said, "There it is, a power grab by a terrified strongman in the dead of night. Classic. If there's anything 2 a.m. is known for, it's desperate moves by sad little men who are afraid to go home feeling like a loser." Been there. James Corden, "Fraud on the American people? Embarrassment to our country? This seems like a weird time for Trump to just start listing his administration's accomplishments." And Colbert with, "Trump's campaign manager came out of the blue to announce, 'We are declaring a victory in Pennsylvania.' Bold. I hope his announcement doesn't overshadow me declaring myself People Magazine's sexiest man alive. I'm coming for you, McConaughey." Ricky Gervais tweeted, "I hope Kanye demands a recount." Conan tweeted, "Let's not be too judgmental. Who among us hasn't said something stupid embarrassing at 2 a.m.? Conan, on another note, said, "Not to brag, but in my 20s, I was known for my ability to give women multiple fake orgasms. That had nothing to do with the election. It's just leftover weekend tweets." And Mark Norman said, "Some of my friends have become like family to me. We don't talk anymore." I look forward to seeing what the late night hosts do with Joe Biden jokes, although we've got 2-3 months of Trump jokes left, I imagine. Hey, David Letterman spoke to Vulture. There's an article on Vulture where David Letterman predicts that Joe Biden will crush Trump in the election, like winning, you know, hugely. They might want to update that article, Dave. Vulture said, "Hey, David Letterman, you've never been on Saturday Night Live," which, by the way, tonight, Dave Chappelle is your host. "Has Lorne Michaels ever asked you, David Letterman, and you said no?" Dave said, "Lorne Michaels? Who? I mean, my goodness, there is someone. I mean, he's NASA to comedy, this guy. Early on, we worked in the same building, and he did ask me, I think, once or twice, and I was scared silly. I had done a variety show with Mary Tyler Moore for one summer in California, so I kind of knew what the drill was, and I was so certain, absolutely positive, that I would screw up his show and have to continue working with him in the same building, and I said, ah, geez, I'm very sorry, and I never did it. Now, I think they do such a nice job of supporting the guests that I probably wouldn't have put them out of business. It's a small regret that was not part of my life, because you see, other people have long, long relationships with Lorne and that show, and I think that's a mark of a great career. I don't have that, but it was my own foolishness." Me jumping in here about Dave's point about them supporting the guest host, they really do. This is what I was saying 2 weeks ago with that Sarah Cooper special. You surround me with, like, Maya Rudolph and John Hamm and write some sketches, I can pull it off. Same thing. Give me Kate McKinnon and I'll just, you know, read some stuff off a cue card. I can get through a couple sketches. Sarah Cooper's special, by the way. Still haven't seen it trending on Netflix, but I digress. Vulture asked, "Hey, Betty White came on in her 90s. If you were asked now, David Letterman, do you think it'd say yes?" Letterman said, "Oh, God, no. Unless I got to go on with Barbara Streisand and Carly Simon and we would sing one of our famous trios. Duets? No, that's three. You know what I'm talking about, Joe." That's just Letterman being wacky. "Hey, David Letterman, what's your pop culture consumption like right now, especially during the pandemic? Do you watch a lot of TV or movies, David Letterman? Is it all news? Do you find ways to keep up with who's hot in comedy right now, David Letterman?" Dave says, Not as much as I did when I was working, because when you're working, you're in that solar system, but not working, you have to go and look for it. Time out here, me jumping in. I remember when they let me go at Sirius XM after running comedy for 10 years, and then Robin Williams died, and I didn't have to deal with it. Like, I was like, oh, I don't have to go into emergency mode. I get to just sit home and not do a broadcast tonight. That's weird. I also missed David Brenner passed away when I was not doing comedy broadcasting, and it was weird. So I totally get what Dave is saying, that, you know, like, I host this every day, so I'm a little more plugged in because I do the research and I go looking for these things to keep myself educated on them. And that's kind of the point of the show, right? Through me, you learn about what's happening in comedy. And when I'm not actually doing this, you kind of get rusty. So I see what Dave is saying there. He says, but not working, you have to go back and look for it. I came across something the other day, which apparently I didn't realize is this genre of presentation on YouTube, and I was delighted by it. It's two twins. I believe they live in Gary, Indiana, and they listen to music for the first time. Music that for me, and I think possibly for you, was typical growing up music we're all aware of, but these kids, because of their age, had never heard of it, and they listen to it for the first time, and then they react to it. David Letterman has discovered reaction videos. And I found these two guys to be just so sweet and lovely, and their reaction to this music is delightful. So that was my latest entry into the world of social media and pop culture, and if that's what it is, I'll take all of it I can get. Do you know what I'm talking about? And the host says, yeah, I've seen them. The one with In the Air Tonight by Phil Collins was amazing. Letterman said, oh my goodness, yeah. And then like everything else, keep watching and watching and watching. Before the internet and social media, you really had to work hard to learn about culture that came before you. But here, you see it demonstrated by these kids and others. And I found it touching and entertaining and just delightful. There's a lot more from that article. I think I'm going to save it. I want to talk about Letterman here because that last part just reminded me. I was on YouTube the other night and I started watching Late Night with David Letterman's third anniversary special. And it just made me so happy. I loved those early daily, especially the credits of Late Night with David Letterman, the understated music, and the, like, very low-key from New York, where, insert joke here, it's Late Night with David Letterman. Tonight, Bill Murray and some band. Now, here's a man who punchline here, David Letterman. But it was so understated, and it just had this vibe of, yeah, we got a show at 12:30, whatever, we'll do what we want. I miss early Dave, so, but it's great. There's some clips on YouTube. Go down the rabbit hole. I did. All right, there's a new show on Showtime Sunday night. It is called Moonbase 8. People seem to like it. Some of those people work at the AV Club. And they said, the original premise for Moonbase 8, a new comedy from John C. Reilly, we like him, Tim Heidecker, we like him, Fred Armisen, we like him, and Jonathan Kreisel, don't know who he is, was one rooted in the isolation horror of The Thing, a group of people stuck in a remote area facing the unknown together. That idea quickly took on a new form, turning into an office comedy that laps other recent entrants in the workspace genre. Yeah, we are talking about you, Space Force. Step it up, Steve Carell. Moonbase 8 stars Riley Heidecker and Armisen as a trio of would-be astronauts training at a number of NASA lunar camps in the U.S. desert. Each member of the group primarily goes by a call name. Riley is Cap. Armisen is Skip. Heidecker is Rook. And Travis Kelce, the Kansas City Chiefs tight end, who's in the show for some reason, I think. They all come to NASA from different walks of life. Cap is a pilot for scenic helicopter tours. He claims to be a military man. Skip is following in his astronaut father's footsteps. And Brooke mainly wants to spread the gospel of Jesus Christ out into the universe. Six episodes. It starts on the 200th day of training, which is also their 200th day in relative isolation from the rest of the world. They still get regular supply drops from NASA and snail mail and video calls from family. The group has their own equilibrium, dividing up professional and domestic labor, all with the goal of joining the 12 people before them who've been on the moon, or so they think. Variety says, unlike the other two comedy series to come out this year, Moonbase 8 mines comedy from the mundanity of these characters waiting for their chance to go to the moon, especially as they again take their training so seriously, either as though they're truly already on the moon or in their fear that every moment is a chance for NASA to kick them out of the program and dash their space dreams. More surprisingly about Moonbase 8 is how soothing it is. From the writing and acting to the directing and cinematography to the very mellow score, especially for a show that's close quarters setting and the portrayal of a specific kind of monotony also makes it perfect for the current state of affairs. Its humor is very specific to all four men's comedic sensibilities without being too surreal. It's on Showtime. It's called Moonbase 8, Sunday at 11. I don't have Showtime in these days, but, you know, I might look over somebody's shoulder and check this out, if you know what I mean. Wink, wink. That is your comedy news for today. Tomorrow, I need a break And I'm going to use, I've got an episode in the can about It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia that I recorded back when the season was on. They should be due for an upcoming season. But this one's been there for a while, and I'm like, let me just use this before it gets too moldy. So tomorrow we'll talk It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. And back to normal on Monday. Subscribe on Apple, follow on Spotify. Thank you so much. See you then.